Hello and welcome to Lexitecture, a podcast about word origins and histories. My name is Ryan, and in each episode, my friend Amy and I bring a new pair of words to share their stories with each other and you. You can find our past episodes and the occasional blog post on our website at lexitecture.com. Follow along with us on Twitter and Facebook at Lexitecture. And if you really like what we do, you can support the show at patreon.com/lexitecture. Today's episode, Danger Goose.
A couple of shout outs to the excellent Duncan. Duncan is my co-worker. He was my secret Santa. Turns out it was the least secret Santa in the universe, and everyone found out who had given who and received who. Yeah. So, but my excellent colleague Duncan, who listens to the podcast, got me a Lexitecture mug for my secret Santa.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And happiness ensued.
Yeah.
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 It's really cool.
We should post that picture. I'll put the picture up and people can see it because it's magnificent.
Let's give Duncan a little hurrah because it was an excellent gift. Also, it had chocolate in the mug.
Which makes every mug better.
Yeah, exactly.
Any given container is improved with the addition of chocolate as its contents.
Also, we should probably say Happy New Year.
We should say Happy New Year. That's right. 2019.
Or at least accepted New Year. That's kind of more how we sound. Like.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's in the bag. New Year.
It's in the bag.
If you're listening to this, you made it. And for that,
also,
you get
props. if you're listening to this, 2019 is gone. It's never coming back.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's an appropriate way to see out 2019, which is a whole lot of suck in it. Lots of really beautiful, wonderful things. I'm not taking away. If you had a wonderful, glorious 2019, then you know I'm very glad that was your experience.
Oh, then fantastic.
But
yeah,
mine.
Absolutely.
Not very good. Some great things, some really not great things. Not sorry to see it go.
I feel like with each passing year, the internet meme of, I'm not saying David Bowie was holding the entire universe together, but gestures widely at everything, becomes more and more kind of, well, all right, fair enough.
The magic is disintegrating, isn't it?
Yeah.
Slowly. Oh, we are cheerful human beings to listen to.
We
right
are.
Now.
Well, this will get better. We're always grumpy
until
we start this thing.
It's funny. I was saying to someone about how I'm not really sorry to see 2019 go, and then I was like, of course. I mean, it's not as though I have a choice.
Yeah.
It's not like I could say, actually, I've decided I'm just going to stop at 2019. Let's just have this year for the rest of my life, please. Not really how time works.
It's like what people say, getting old sucks, but the addition is, but I suppose it beats the alternative.
Well, that is true. Also, 2020. We are now in 2020, which is actually the future.
Clear vision for the future and all the rest of the puns that go along with it.
Yeah, the reason I got caught, I was caught in traffic getting here to this recording, and I was sat for quite a while at a part of Dundee that has been being redeveloped for about 5,000 years now, and it's the
right.
waterfront, and it's going to be really beautiful. But the slogan when they first started the redevelopment was Dundee Waterfront 2020 Vision.
Oh, okay.
So I was thinking, oh, hey, that means it should be finished soon. It doesn't look like it's going to be finished soon, but again, nice things have come out of that. We have a very beautiful Victoria and Albert Museum in Dundee, which people come to visit, and it's nice and it's cool, and it's the only V&A design museum outside of London and all that kind of stuff. But there's quite a lot of, like, what I was noticing while I was sat in traffic was they have these temporary plywood kind of walls that they erect around building sites and developments and things like that.
Right.
And there is a ginormous area where the weeds have grown taller than the quite tall plywood panels. And I was thinking, like, you can't otherwise see what's behind the plywood panels at all. They're too high. And I was thinking, I can't even remember from the plans and the submissions and all that stuff, what's going to be there when it's finished. And then I noticed the giant weeds and I was like, maybe not a whole heap of industry going on behind those plywood panels.
Yeah.
Maybe someone's just forgotten what's supposed to happen with this bit.
Yeah. It's just the community whole now.
Yeah, I hope not. I suspect it might be.
Yeah.
So did you notice last time that I bought myself a pop filter?
Oh, I did. Yes, I was.
You did. Oh, bonus!
I was like, I wonder if that's a thing that's happened.
I'm feeling very kitted up because I bought a pop filter and I have a new wire. An exciting new wire. The wire is as I discovered when I looked it up. Basically, the PCM recorder that I use to record this podcast is. I mean, I bought it a reasonable number of years ago and it's great and it does exactly what I need it to do and a whole lot more things that I don't know how to make it do, but it can do them. And it has a USB-C to USB jack.
Right.
If I want to plug it into a computer or if I want to plug it into the wall. And I do like to plug it into the wall because I don't trust batteries when we are recording things like this. You know, yeah. So I generally do plug it into to the wall. The problem being that the original wire is perhaps half a meter long.
But that's not super long.
It's not tiny, but it's not super long. So the time that we lost the recording because my PCM recorder fell over.
Yep.
It was because I had it precariously balanced on, I think, my knee, because that was the only place I could put it and still have it plugged into the wall.
Right.
So yeah. Now I basically feel like I'm free.
Oh, okay, so the new one's much longer and you're able to just do a thing.
Yeah, I can sit it on the desk next to me or pick it up and look at it. I don't even have to turn like 180 degrees to see where it is anymore.
Oh, man.
So,
luxury. Yeah.
Luxury.
That's fantastic.
Indeed.
Awesome.
Okay, let's get word in then.
Yes.
Are you going first or will I go first?
You go first.
Okay. So, the word I am going to talk about today is goose.
Oh.
Now, I already feel like you're going to laugh at my accent during this episode.
Because
the way I say goose and the way you say goose, they're not the same at all. It is quite a lovely sounding word.
It is.
And the Oxford English Dictionary, excuse me, defines goose as a general name for the large web-footed birds of the subfamily Anserinae, family Anatidae, usually larger than a duck and smaller than a swan, including Anser and several allied genera. So many words in there that I love.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why.
Okay.
This week on the Facebook page, I mean, this week in the future when this episode comes out. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
damn
yeah.
You, future.
Yeah.
I posted about one of our favourite etymologies, the thagomizer.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
And when I started to research the word goose, I had forgotten about the word anatidae, however that's pronounced. We both know that we can't pronounce Latin well, so let's just live with
that. Yeah, we'll just go.
And this reminded me of yet another really, really wonderful Gary Larson cartoon. Because Gary Larson and his one-panelled genius has a cartoon which shows a window through which you can see another sort of far-off distant window. And in the far-off distant window opposite, there is a tiny little duck just sat at the window looking slightly sinister. And the caption that goes with it is anatidophobia. The fear that somewhere out there a duck is watching you.
Oh, man.
And I remember reading in the whichever collection, it was in a collection, a Far Side sort of best of anniversary, whatever. That was where I first saw it. And he wrote about having to make up the word anatidophobia. And yeah. I found myself wondering when I saw this as part of the entry for Goose, whether or not anatidophobia is now, as the thagomizer is, an accepted word that has made it into the dictionary. I mean, we've talked about it before. You can take pretty much any Greek Latin root and slap a phobia on the end of there and people will kind of accept it. But the notion that a duck might be watching you was just so brilliantly, surreally hilarious.
Such a good card.
That word has always stuck with me. So the Anatidae family that the goose belongs to, larger than a duck and smaller than a swan. And then we have also the subfamily Anserinae. I'm going to talk to you about that in a minute, but okay. let's see where goose is actually coming from, first of all.
Yeah, okay.
Etym Online has a large waterfowl, proverbially noted, I know not why, for foolishness. This is from Samuel Johnson's dictionary. And there is this inexplicable and undeniable connection between the large waterfowl and the sense of silliness and foolishness. And we'll see how that goes. You know, it's very much... People have been calling silly people gooses or a goose for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
The word originally comes from a Proto-Indo-European root gans, that's G-H-A-N-S. And from gans, we get the Germanic pathway, gos, gans, goose, which gives us the English word. We also have Latin anser, cancer, ken, again, that G-H sound becoming a K-H sound.
Right.
And various other ges, goose, geis sounding words.
Hmm.
Ganso in Spanish, which is interestingly from a Germanic source, which doesn't happen very often in Spanish. And what it says here on Etym Online, loss of N sound before S is normal in English, compare tooth. And then, of course, we have the wonderful, wonderful plural, geese, which is, Etym Online tells me, an example of I mutation. And there are other words that take this plural. And lots of other words that don't, but which occasionally I wish did. And so, mises and, you know, other such etymological silliness happens quite often.
Yeah, of course.
Me being etymologically silly? Surely not.
Perish the thought.
Etym Online notes that the meaning of a simpleton or a silly or a foolish person is from the early 15th century. So as I said, people who have been silly are gooses for a very, very, very long time. What I love most about the pie root is that it means goose. In other words, geese have been around for as long as our language has. In fact, as long as our language has, the language before that, and all the other languages before that.
Yeah.
And that's quite, it's quite lovely.
That's interesting.
You know, I don't know if I imagined that language came first and then all the things that we give words to somehow were invented, which is, you know, clearly not the case. But it reminded me of a few weeks ago, a question popped into my head, as is often the case. And it was one of those questions where immediately I thought, Amy, that is a stupid question. I can't believe you're even wondering about that. Obviously, you know what the answer is. This is a very obvious question.
Okay.
And then I Googled it to check and found that I was wrong. I was completely wrong, which I found very, very interesting. So I won't tell you what my assumed obvious answer was, okay, but the question was this. What came first, plants or animals?
Plants?
My initial response was to say, plants, obviously,
right,
you idiot, buffoon. Yep. And then I looked it up. Nope. Animals, by quite a long way. So the first single-celled organisms were animals. And they precede fungi, which are pretty old, and basic forms of plant life like algae and lichens by something like 150 million years, which I found completely mind-blowing.
Yeah,
but then also very, you know, it's very obvious and sensible when you consider it like that.
Yeah, so, it's early for this. What are you doing to me?
So yeah, you know, life as we think of it in terms of evolution. I might also point out that with the greatest respect to anyone's religious beliefs, except when they're crazy. When I Googled it, the first response I got was, clearly the animals came first because the Bible tells us that God invented them first.
Right.
Sigh. And science has got nothing to do with this question. The response actually said, and science has got nothing to do with this question.
Right.
And it was one of these sites like Quora or, you know, Yahoo Answers or something like that.
Yeah.
And this guy was a pastor in a church somewhere. And the second response to the question was from a biochemistry professor.
Right.
So again, with all due respect to people's religious beliefs, when it's a question of scientific fact, I will go with the biochem professor.
Yeah.
If that makes me a terrible human being, well, here I am. terrible.
It's in, yeah, okay. I won't get it. I won't get into it. It's interesting that the answers were the same, but one person had. Like I went to. I have a master's in theology and all the rest, and so, yeah. I look at the fact that the Genesis creation myth sort of roughly gets the order right. But I don't look at that as that, so that's how, like, so science has nothing to do with it. Like...
Oh, I'm sorry. No, the answer, I've just looked it up again. The answer that was given by the guy who works in a church is neither, because evolution is a biological impossibility.
Okay, well, yeah.
That's what he said.
Right. That's silly.
I'm like, yeah. I respect your faith, sir, but also that's not true.
But this is a question outside the bounds of your faith. So, but yeah. Now we're going to get ourselves in trouble. Or at least I am.
Anyway.
I don't know. Also, the fact that Quora and Yahoo Answers existed and people looked at them for answers, but people questioned Wikipedia for its, oh, well, it's just people giving their opinion. It's like...
Yeah.
You've had to filter out, use other faculties to filter out answers on the internet since there's been an internet. So.
Yeah. It's funny, I it's a real get up on my soapbox thing because Wikipedia, I remember reading this somewhere, probably on the internet, so who knows if it was true or not. But I remember reading that Wikipedia is more accurate than the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Well, there's a fluidity to it, you know?
Like... I believe that entirely. Have you ever, I don't know if you've ever edited a Wikipedia article. I have a couple of times because I'm a huge pedant. And when I see spelling and grammatical and punctuation mistakes in an online dictionary, I feel like I'm going to point those out.
Yeah.
In a helpful, let's make this better kind of way.
Yeah.
And it's rigorous. You know, the procedure that you have to go through to submit that is, you know, it's not just like anybody can do anything. Also... Much in the same way that we were imagining the kind of street fight between church Latin and classical Latin.
Oh, I was hoping we were going to get into this.
I think it was Scott, one of our followers, mentioned this, and it made me think immediately of the IT Crowd episode where Moss plays Street Countdown. Have you seen that episode? It's outstanding. Just wonderful. But I kind of have a mental picture of the team of Wikipedia editors, contributors.
Mm.
Now, even though real life intervenes and tells me that it's a vast, enormous, unimaginable number of people, each doing a little bit at a time, I still kind of feel as though there's a little hub of librarian-type people who are in charge of it. And I don't know if you know many librarians, but I trust those guys.
Mm-hmm.
They will be on my team in the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
For sure.
For a really fun... / sometimes slightly depressing, but still kind of cathartic, look at the dregs of humanity and how petty we can be as a species. Look up, just run a search for like top 10 Wikipedia edit wars.
Yes.
And you will find people who have gone back and forth on just the most, like changing like one word mm-hmm. in an article back and forth for months at a time, daily. It's just people scrapping over the small. It's really funny.
And this is it. Like I say to pupils at school when they're like, oh, you can't use Wikipedia as a source in an article. And I'm like, no, you can't. But you can use the sources that Wikipedia used because Wikipedia has really stringent rules about what sources are used and how articles are cited. So if you want to get a broad overview on a topic, it's an ideal place to visit.
Yeah.
If you want to have, you know, cold, hard, factual, I can back this up evidence, follow the same process that the editors did.
Yeah.
Because those guys have done that stuff already. But I can well imagine that if you were to just fuck with Wikipedia for a bit and go in and make a series of ridiculous changes, I'd be very interested to see how long it takes people to pick up on that and change them out.
Yeah.
You know, it's... Anyway, that was a bit of a tangent. Honk, mm-hmm. honk. So back to geese.
Right, geese.
Because the word goose is such an old one, we have an old English citation, Riddle 24.
Nice.
Now, I'm gonna give you this, even though it's probably gibberish. Ik eom wonderlikuwit, Rathsnae, mine stefne, whilem greid the swagos, whilem gaele swa hafok.
Neat.
Yeah, I don't know what it means either.
I liked hearing
while,
it, though.
While the goose does something, something else is causing havoc. Something along those lines.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sounds
and
like,
then we
yeah.
continue to get, you know, as you would expect from an animal that is so ever-present. And at this time of, you know, eating far too much seasonal year, suddenly the shops are all selling goose fat. This is kind of what drew my attention to this word.
Mm.
And it used to, you know, when Victorian Christmases became what we now call Christmas, you know, most of those traditions, the tree and the decorations and the cards, come from the Victorian era. And goose was the Christmas meal of choice for, mm-hmm. for most people. If you remember, Scrooge leans out of his window after the third ghost is gone and he tells the boy passing in the street to go and buy the biggest goose he can find.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you want to hear more about turkey and Christmas, there's an episode about that too. But goose, fun to say, as old as pie itself, mm-hmm. and it gives its name to so many different phrases and other things that are going on. It's just a really wonderfully interesting place to get to.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
However, we also get the dark side of the goosing.
Oh,
we
yeah.
have the verb to goose, as in to pinch someone's backside. Now, this is much older than I expected it to be. Item Online cites it around about 1880.
Oh.
And says that it's perhaps from the resemblance of the upturned thumb to a goose's beak, or from the notion of creating nervous excitement. This is what they have. So rather than a pinch, they talk about it as a jab in the rear, presumably yeah. with the thumb.
But anyone who taught in Korea is having flashbacks right now.
Yes, indeed. Fun fact, in Ugh. Korea, in Korea, the goosing equivalent is dongchim. And dongchim literally means shit needle. And yep. the target is not the butt cheek, shall we say. Yeah, it's put the palms of the hands together to form a pointy hand structure and then proceed with the shit needling.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was funny for about, what, 4.5 seconds?
Oh, you are vastly more generous with your sense of humor. Oh boy.
Well, I'm kind of glad that we've gotten to that we've gotten to this point already, because Item Online goes on to tell us more about the dark side of the word goose. A broad range of sexual slang senses historically cluster around goose and gooseberry. Now, gooseberries are hairy, and so they were slang for testicles.
Oh.
And we also have the, you know, the most ridiculously contrived made-up linguistic quirk ever. In rhyming slang, goose and duck was rhyming slang for fuck.
Okay.
We then get, so Item Online has, Farmer identifies Winchester goose as a woman, whence by implication, the sexual favour. Whereas the OED has a little further. They have, in fact, Winchester goose, a certain venereal disorder, sometimes simply a goose, also a prostitute. Now, oh. this is another one of these very wonderful obsolete usages of the word, first cited in 1598 in World of Words.
I need that book.
And then we get to 1751. In the times of Popery, here were no less than 18 houses on the Bankside, licensed by the BPS of BPS of Winchester, I couldn't figure out what BPS meant, to keep whores, who were therefore commonly called Winchester geese. And it's not a huge stretch to go from a prostitute to a venereal disease. So,
right.
yeah, we start to get this sense of the Winchester goose.
Huh.
And we also have goosing meaning, goosing as a verb, to go wenching, to womanize, or to possess a woman.
Okay.
And goose grease for a woman's sexual juices, while wow. gooser and goose's neck meant the penis. Again, not big, not clever, but you can see where all of these words come from.
Yeah, there's a certain continuity.
Yeah. And so whether you're eating it for Christmas or using the fat to do whatever the hell it is people do with goose fat, or you are getting interested in the anserine root of the word.
Nice.
I did say I would tell you some more about anserine.
Yeah.
Because, yay, Amy gets to talk about anatomy again. There is an area on the leg in humans that's called the pes anserine, which literally means goose foot.
Oh.
And the pes anserine is the tendon of three muscles, and they come together to form basically a goose foot shaped structure.
Oh, okay.
So the pes anserine tendon, which is a really interesting place structurally because of the muscles that connect to it, it really amuses me, and I love the fact that it's called a goose foot tendon, because sometimes anatomy gets very technical and fancy, and, you know, things are, you almost need as much studying to work out why the word is what the word is as you do to even understand what the word means, never mind where it is. But the pes anserine, the goose foot, is a nice, simple, easy, does what it says on the tin.
Right.
Looks like a goose foot, let's call it that.
Call it a goose foot.
Kind of thing. So, geese,
yeah,
geese, leaving their footprints across human bodies and etymology for a very, very, very long time.
Very long time. Love it. I like that we've openly admitted and accepted that this is the time of year for indulgence and stuff, because not only have I let myself go, I am chasing myself away at this point. So I was going to the gym during the last few months. I was like, yeah, it's okay. It's getting in shape, getting a little fitter. And now it's like, just nope. I have 2 weeks to destroy all of that. Let's do this.
Not only have I let myself go, I am chasing myself away. I have paid my own ransom.
That's right.
How much further can we extend this metaphor? I'm enjoying this.
I'm following myself down the driveway, waving a red hot poker. Made of goose fat.
It is that way. I don't know if you ever see the Daily Mash on Facebook.
Yeah, sometimes.
I really love the Daily Mash. And they have a lot of, they've had a lot of really great Christmas articles. And one of them has been about the phenomenon of, fuck it, it's Christmas.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what you're talking about.
Absolutely.
Whereby you're like, why can't I have eggnog for breakfast? I'm gonna.
Yeah, exactly. There's just, once you ask why not, the sky's the limit. Yeah.
Fuck it, it's Christmas.
Very cool. Goose, geeses, and geeses. I like
it. Yes.
I also like, either way, the title of this episode's gonna come down.
Oh, nice.
So my word today is danger.
Danger goose, so, danger
I'm
goose.
I'm thinking danger goose is probably the way to go.
Although goose danger, a very real thing.
Goose danger is a very, yeah, geese are just dicks. They're terrible.
Another reason why I decided to research this word was that two of my colleagues told stories about when they were children, their grandparents or parents owned a goose. And I was like, wait a minute, what's the chances of one person in the room having owned a goose? Here we have two.
Yeah,
but they were
two.
Talking about how very vicious the geese could be if you sort of infringed upon their air.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they're just
goose danger.
So danger. Danger is sort of interesting. It's a bit of a shorter one, but I thought it was neat because it comes from the French, but it's had several different sort of sense meanings. But both Edom Online and the OED kind of both acknowledge and agree that the changes in sense happen in French. And then the word kind of dropped into English with that sense meaning, which is, it's a weird thing for them both to note, because of course, as we know, obviously, once a word is a word, its meaning changes organically anyway.
It can do what it likes.
And so all words that we've ever looked at or will ever look at for the most part undergo some sort of sense change.
Yeah.
Over the course of its
history. So it's as though, in this case, French kind of played around with it for a while, tried it on in a couple of different contexts, kicked it around a bit, and then once they were sure, They give it to English.
Yeah, and a couple of times. So the earliest use is like in the early 1200s in the OED. And then it shows up with a new meaning around the 1400s. But the difference between those two, like that wasn't a, the English uses either weren't very common or were fairly stagnant. And then the sense changed in French and then it dropped back into English in a weird way.
Okay.
Anyway, that's just sort of a bird's eye view. I'll actually talk about some useful, interesting stuff. I think.
Do we talk about useful, interesting stuff? Man, no. I didn't know that was the brief.
Maybe.
I have been letting you down.
I feel like maybe interesting is already sort of pushing it. In the early 1200s, the word danger was still a noun, but it was something that someone had. It was something that someone possessed, and it meant like power, control. It's the power of a master or a lord was that person's danger.
Wow.
And so you would say, I mean, it was always his, so it was always him, obviously.
Well, how much power women had in the 12th century.
So the earliest uses of danger, you wouldn't say, I'm in danger or you're in danger of this. You would be like, I trespassed on his land and I was in his danger, if that makes sense.
And that's so it's really cool.
It's kind of it folded into that is the obviously the authority and dominion and control and stuff, but also the power to basically the power to injure or the power to do harm to is kind of incorporated in that. So it's got like the germs of the seeds of what's will later become the modern uses of danger. But I thought that was an interesting thing. You're in someone's danger. And in the sort of late 1200s, early 1300s, it also meant like difficulty, not difficulty as in a challenge or impediment to doing something. Mm-hmm. But if you are kind of someone asks when you're a kid and you're asked to clean your room and you're making things difficult about doing it, you're grudging, you're kind of dragging your feet, and you're grumbling and making kind of a stink about it.
Surely then children never do things like that.
No, I mean, I didn't. I've just heard other people did.
So this would be danger.
And you would, so then danger was something that you made or raised. So you would be making danger about doing something was
okay.
Just being difficult and not making things easy on whoever was trying to get you to do the thing. And so there's kind of a connection with the danger. Yeah, because presumably, if you're making a big stink of it, you're being sort of incentivized or coerced into doing it by someone in whose danger you are, to use the old thing. So you can kind of see the connection there,
yeah.
I think. It didn't show up as sort of the abstract noun that we know it as today, where it's like liability, the way OED puts it is liability or exposure to harm or injury.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't show up until like 1490 is the earliest OED citation. So it's several centuries later. And it's a descendant of one of the uses of one of the early 1200 uses, but just honed a little bit, and it definitely took on more of an abstract quality. So you would be in danger of something, but danger is not a tangible thing. It's just that sense of being at risk of that. Etymologically wise, it comes through the French naturally to Latin, when you trace it backwards, to the word dominarium, meaning the power of a lord, so the same meaning, from dominus, lord or master, from domus, meaning house.
Ah, the person in charge of the house.
Mm-hmm. And so the transition from D-O-M in Latin to like D-O-N-G or D-A-N-G is also shows up in the word dungeon.
Oh, nice.
Because it comes from the same dominus master branch of that particular family tree. And dungeon originally meant the biggest, like the great tower of a castle, the biggest tower of a castle, which was often the or part of the keep, which is where it got the sense of like a cell for ne'er-do-wells or people who'd run afoul of the master or lord. But that you get that NG, that M to NG change shows up there.
I'm still having my mind blown about the fact that I've never considered the link between domus and dominus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so the pi root, going back even further, is D-E-M, and it means house or household. And that's where we get the dom in domestic or domain or condominium. Mm. So the with, living with, many houses together type of thing. It also gives us the word madam or ma'am or madame, because madame is just a compressing together of the French ma dame, or just literally my lady. Mm-hmm. From the Latin mea domina, mistress, my lady master. From the same thing, domus.
Mistress has such different connotations to lady master, doesn't it?
It does, I think.
Although a lady master does sound like something that ill-advised husbands buy for their wives, which causes a great deal of domestic friction.
You thought the Peloton ad was bad. Wait till you come across the lady master. Everybody's getting fired on Twitter. So pretty short little thing, but I thought it was interesting how it had changed from being specifically. I think the thing I found interesting about it was that it is sort of a social history encapsulated in the words transition, right? So we go from
yeah, it's lovely.
Serfdom, and I'm totally losing. There's a word for that period, that arrangement of society where the peasant-lord relationship.
I am also totally
blanking on that word. The
master-retainer.
There's a word for it, but I'm not.
There's definitely a word for it. We're usually quite good at the words, but not today.
Somebody send something in and say,
somebody find
dummy,
us a
it's
word
this thing. But anyway,
something.
Words. That arrangement of society where you were specifically beholden to the lord of the manor, so to speak. And where, you really didn't have to worry about a lot necessarily. You had to worry about a lot if you were a peasant in the 1200s. But chiefly you had to worry about the person whose danger you were in. And then as it kind of broadened out, as society sort of shifted, how much it's shifted is up for debate, I guess. But you get a more abstract. People are scared because danger can come from everywhere is what I'm going to say.
This is what I was thinking. I started off thinking, this is quite a nice social history. It's about, you know, democratization and the breakdown of those sort of very rigid relationships. But in fact, as is the case when you break down any rigid structure, then chaos becomes inherent in what was once not chaotic. It was ordered. So being in someone's danger, you could avoid that. You could not be in someone's danger by not getting on their lands or pissing them off. And raising danger is something that could also be avoided. Something that you would either specifically seek out or specifically attempt to do. Whereas danger lurking around every corner, the abstract that you can't even see, that's kind of, yeah.
Feudalism.
I think I'd rather be in someone's danger.
Feudalism is the word.
Feudalism is the word.
There it is.
Sorry, Greece. Feudalism is the word. Is the word. Is the word.
You can all put Twitter down. So there's danger. So danger goose or goose
cool.
danger.
I always, it's a word that reminds me of that phenomenon, which there's also a word for this and I never remember what it is, where you've only seen a word written down and you don't know how it's pronounced.
Oh yeah.
Because I remember my mum telling me years and years and years ago that as a little girl, sort of first learning to read, she couldn't work out why there were signs on the roads that said danger.
I like that.
And eventually realised that the word was danger. But I quite like danger. I sometimes pronounce it like that in my head when I see those signs.
Yeah.
Nice.
And that's it for another episode of Lexitecture. To get in touch with us about something you heard in this episode, you can email us at words@lexitecture.com. You can also follow along and talk to us at Lexitecture on Facebook and Twitter, and at Lexitecture Podcast on Instagram. For back episodes and the occasional blog post, visit us at lexitecture.com. Thanks very much, and we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you.